Okay, first I want to thank Natalie Horowitz for sponsoring this shiur. Lizchus Le'ilui Nishmas, her grandmother Shena Bas Avramala Shalom, Lizchus for our learning tonight should be an aliyah for her neshama, and very much want to thank the Newmans, Elisheva Newman in particular, for hosting the shiur this evening. And just a reminder that if anyone would like to host or sponsor any future shiurim or suggest a topic for a future shiur, tell Daniela, and she'll tell me, and we'll take care of it. I would strongly recommend that someone maybe suggest the topic of some sort of Pesach topic sometime between now and Pesach, because we're going to. I think it makes sense to have a Pesach share at some point between now and Pesach. So hopefully, maybe in another week or two, whenever you think is best, we should maybe get together and do our annual Pesach share. Okay, so the topic that was requested for this evening was the obligation of married women to cover their hair in halacha and hashkafa. That was the topic, and again, when the topic went out, I got an email from somebody with only one word in it, with the word really, and followed by three question marks. So I didn't really know what to make of that email. So I explained that these topics are chosen by the women, whatever they want to hear about. So if you'd like a different topic, and I assume if someone had a problem with this topic, they wouldn't be here, but if you'd like a different topic, so please, by all means, at any time, you can tell Daniela or you can tell me, and I'm happy to give on whatever topic, within reason, whatever topic you want me to give a shiur on. So halacha and hashkafa of married women covering the hair. So the halacha part is easy for me, in the sense that that's what I do all day, pretty much, learn halacha and present halacha. And I got a phone call today from someone who may or may not be related to me, who's sitting in this room, which does not narrow it down that much, but who said, "Oh boy, I hope you're ready for tonight." And I didn't really view it as a particularly challenging or controversial topic in halacha. In halacha, it's a fairly straightforward topic in halacha, like any other topic in halacha, where you have your machlokasim and your various minhagim, and you have a plethora of sources to go through and to discuss. It operates like any other topic. It's not like a complicated topic in halacha like Lashon Hara. That's a very complicated topic in halacha, and that's one that I would think would be much more uncomfortable for most of us, because most of us have a much more difficult time with that, and that obviously is much more damaging in the long run. But I thought it's a fairly uncomplicated topic in halacha. In hashkafa, it may or may not be complicated, but I'm going to try to do my best to give a couple of hashkafic points that I thought of, but at the end of the day, I don't really know what I'm talking about in the hashkafic elements of covering the hair, because I can tell you what I've read, what I've seen, but I it's not something that I've experienced, obviously, so firsthand, so it's not something that I can relate to on that level. So let's start with the easy part first. We'll start with the halacha, and again, if anyone has any questions, I think it's a good idea to ask questions even during this year. If you want to wait till after this year because you don't want to ask questions during this year, that's fine also. I'm just going to go through the basic halachos, and then a couple of what I thought were important ideas to keep in mind hashkafically. The idea of covering the hair in the Gemara is discussed in the Gemara Maseches Ksubos on Daf Ayin Beis. And the Gemara, the context of the discussion are what are grounds for divorce and what are not grounds for divorce, and when you have grounds for divorce, at what point does a woman do something that would cause her to lose her ksuba, and at what point does she do something that does not cause her to lose her ksuba, but it would be enough grounds for divorce? That's the context of the discussion of hair covering. So the general rule is that a person, husband or wife, who does an avera is not necessarily considered to have ruined the marriage and therefore cause necessarily grounds for divorce, and certainly not necessarily cause grounds for losing a ksuba. But if someone, so Avera won't necessarily do that, but if it's the kind of Avera that would ruin the marriage, that would make it impossible to live with the other person. For example, if a woman is in the habit of cooking non-kosher food and telling the husband, "Oh yeah, don't worry about it, it's kosher," and continuing to give him non-kosher food as kosher, well then he's got a problem and he can't live in that house anymore, that's going to be an issue, that's grounds for divorce. Not because the Avera she did is it is a pretty serious Avera, Lifnei Iver is a pretty serious Avera, but like if let's say she's a mechal Shabbos, so then she doesn't necessarily lose her ksuba. If she just likes to turn lights on and off in Shabbos in the privacy of her own bathroom when she goes to the bathroom or something, and no one knows the difference and no one sees it and it doesn't affect the marriage in any way, so she's chayiv skila, but she's not chayiv to lose her ksuba. She's not going to lose her ksuba for something like that. So that's the context of the sugya, is that the Gemara discusses what is the kind of violation that is considered to ruin the marriage. Now, one of the assumptions going in when you learn that Gemara is that when they got married, there was a certain understanding. That when they got married, there was a certain understanding that she was going to live up to whatever the standard was in the times of the Gemara, and if she then falls short of that standard later on, so then we could talk about what are grounds for divorce and grounds for losing the ksuba. Now, if a woman gets married and the understanding with the husband is that she's not going to cover her hair, and that's, or let's say you have the other way. Let's say the understanding that the woman has with the man is that the guy is not going to be so makbid on going to minyan, and then later on the woman gets very frum and she decides that she's embarrassed that her husband doesn't go to minyan. Well, he's the one that changed. She's the one that's changing things up in that situation, and therefore. Or that wouldn't be grounds for her to, let's say, demand a divorce from the husband because you're not going to minyan. Well, you married me as someone who's not going to minyan. If a woman gets married and the husband says, let's say, at the time that they're getting married, that he wants to be a lawyer, and then later on he decides he gets this crazy idea in his head that he wants to be a rabbi. So the husband the husband is the one that's making the change, and obviously would require the permission of the wife to make any such sort of change. So in that context, with that background, the Gemara says that when a woman goes out with uncovered hair, again working with the assumption that when they got married she was supposed to cover her hair, and she goes out with uncovered hair, she's in violation of what's called Das Yehudis. So the Gemara says, what do you mean? If you go out with uncovered hair, totally uncovered hair, that's an Issur D'Oraisa. That's based on a Pasuk, Uparas Rosh HaIsha, Pasuk in Parshas Naso. That's not just what we would call Das Yehudis, which is generally assumed to be an Issur D'Rabbanan. So the Gemara says, no, on a D'Oraisa level, all you would need is to put the baskets, you ever see like they used to wear baskets on their head to carry things? Is it the Raisin Lady? So where's the basket? On that. So on a Daraisa level, that's I should know what the Raisin Lady looks like. Right? So on a Daraisa, is it the Raisin Lady? Trabacana Lady, right. So on a Daraisa, you don't take Sneus advice from the Trabacana Lady otherwise, but but in terms of the basket on her head, that was something that would save the Isra Daraisa, meaning on a Daraisa level, that's all you would require, just something on top of the head. But Das Yehudis requires a better covering, requires a little bit more. Now, is the better covering a chiyuv d'oraisa or not? A simple reading of the, or is the original covering a chiyuv d'oraisa? A simple reading of the Gemara suggests that it's certainly d'oraisa, and that's the opinion of many, many poskim. There are poskim that try to be medayik, that try to derive from the language of the Rambam, that the Rambam may be held that it's d'rabanan. Not all that convincing that the Rambam held that it's d'rabanan. Pashut pshat is that there is a chiyuv d'oraisa on some level to cover the hair. Now, Moshe has a very interesting discussion. At first starts off hypothetical, but then it becomes lemaisa. He discusses what is the nature of the requirement for a woman to cover her hair. Is it a mitzvah to cover her hair, or is it an isser to uncover the hair? Meaning, if a woman goes out without any covering on her hair, is that the same as, let's say, wearing shatnez, which would be an isser? Or is it, no, that when she covers her hair, it's the same as, let's say, being mafresh challah, which would be a mitzvah. So do we view it as a mitzvah, or do we view it as an isser? So what difference does it make? We're not allowed to do isurim, and we have to do mitzvah. So either way, you have to do it. Why would it matter? So the reason it would matter is that if when it comes to an isser, one would have to go through extreme discomfort and extreme expense even in order to avoid violating an isser. But when it comes to doing a mitzvah, there's a limit to what HaKadosh Baruch Hu expects from us to fulfill a mitzvah. Let's say it's right before the Yom Tov of Pesach, and Shmura Matzah is extremely expensive, and I only have, let's say, $50 to my name, and the cheapest Shmura Matzah is $25. So the halacha is, I don't have to spend the money on Shmura Matzah. Now, I'm not allowed to eat chametz, but because that's an isser, but I wouldn't have to spend half of my life savings on Shmura Matzah. There's a limit with the only exceptions to this rule, that the general rule is you don't have to spend more than 20% of your money for any mitzvah. To avoid violating Nisra, you have to spend everything. The exceptions to the rule are the mitzvah of Pur Revu. Children are expensive and they cost more than 20% of your money, and that's understood, it's like part of it, and Talmud Torah to send children to yeshiva. Is also, it's understood to cost more than 20% of your money. It's interesting, some of the yeshiva's tuition boards will make the cutoff with the expectation that 20% of gross income is what you're gonna spend on tuition before you're eligible for tuition assistance, that they just chose that number randomly, but it happens to be the number for mitzvahs in general, but for Talmud Torah is probably an exception anyway. So Rav Moshe says, let's say covering the hair would cause an expense of more than 20% of your income. So if it's an isser, well, it doesn't matter, you gotta do it anyway, because you're not allowed to violate an isser. You have to spend all your money to avoid violating an isser. But if it's a mitzvah, then you only have to spend up until that amount of money. So Rav Moshe says, yeah, but how could it possibly cost that amount of money? I guess he didn't hear about $6,000 shekels, but how could it possibly cost that amount of money? So Rav Moshe says, no, it's not only about money. What if the discomfort that a woman would have would be the equivalent of the amount, meaning she would be willing to pay 20% of her savings to not have to go through that discomfort? So then you could attach a dollar amount to that discomfort. So would she be obligated to cover her hair? If it's an isser, yeah, she still has to cover her hair because there's an isser to not cover your hair. But if it's a mitzvah to cover your hair, so if you could put a dollar amount to that discomfort and she'd be willing to, she says, look, we make whatever it is, $100,000 a year, I'm willing to pay 50 of it not to have to cover my hair, well then she, that sar that she has from covering her hair would exempt her. So which is it? Is it a mitzvah or is it an isser? So Moshe says a phenomenal chiddush. He says it's a machlokas rishonim, really. But he says when we're dealing with a married woman, we should view it as an iser. When we're dealing with a divorced woman, we should view it as a mitzvah. And this is Rav Moshe's major tshuva about a divorced woman who very often is uncomfortable. She's looking for a shidduch, and it's difficult for her to cover her hair, and it's very uncomfortable for her to cover her hair. So Rav Moshe says, how uncomfortable is it? Is it, if it's uncomfortable to the tune of 20% of your money or more, well then it's a mitzvah and you don't have to do it. And a divorced woman would not have to cover her hair. But for a married woman, we view it as an iser. And therefore, no matter how uncomfortable it is, it's like you would have to give up all your money not to wear shatnez and not to drive on Shabbos and not to all the surim in the Torah. It would be the same as any other iser where one would have to spend all their money. So that's Rav Moshe's analysis. Now, Rav Sternbach suggests that there may be an additional issue. In addition to whatever degree of tznius or pritzos or whatever it might be, Rav Sternbach in his Tshuvos Vanhagos and Chelek Beis suggests that maybe there's an additional issue of b'chukoseyam lo selechu. That the halacha is that the Torah says we're not allowed to go in the ways of the Goyim. And the Rama in Yeridaya in Siman Kufayin Ches writes that anything that the Umos Ha'olam have done, that the Goyim have done, l'shem pritzos, for the sake of pritzos, to follow those minhagim would be considered chukas akum. So Shurmach says it used to be that even in the non-Jewish world, all the women wore hats and they put their hairs up in a bun or whatever. It was a totally different kind of style. And now the style's changed as part of a movement toward more pritzos that we see in our society. So he suggests that would be chukas akum. So once you're dealing with chukas akum, then you're definitely dealing with a d'oraisa level din, and that would obviously add a certain level of seriousness to it. Rav Avad Yosef says he's not convinced at all. He says, no, they didn't do it for pritzos, they did it because it's annoying to cover their hair. The reason they started, the non-Jewish world stopped covering their hair wasn't because they wanted to be more parutz necessarily, it was just because it was very uncomfortable, and they would rather be comfortable. So he's not convinced that would be chukas akum. Again, Rav Vadia obviously acknowledges that the din does exist. It's not an issue of chukas akum. It's an internal issue. It's a Jewish issue. It's not an issue of mimicking the Goyim. Now, the major discussion in Poskim really revolves around two areas halachically about covering, three areas I would say about covering there. First of all, how private an area does it have to be to leave one's hair uncovered? I remember a while back my wife and I were eating a Shabbos meal by someone who's very frum, and the husband is a phenomenal Talmud Chacham, someone I still to this day discuss a lot of shailas with, and I didn't notice anything, but my wife said afterwards, I can't believe her hair was uncovered the entire meal. Like, I didn't even, like, it didn't register with me at all. But, his Rebbe held that and holds that when there's a very limited number of people and it's your own home, that you don't have to cover your hair. So where does that come from? Where does such a shita come from? I'm not related to her. I wasn't, I have no connection to her other than just being friends. Where does that come from? So that's one issue. How private an area would it have to be in order for one to not have to cover their hair in that area? A second major issue is how much hair can show, meaning what does it mean to cover the hair? Does it mean to cover the hair entirely? Is there any part that's allowed to not be covered? And a third major discussion, even though in our communities in America we seem to have clearly taken one position on this, is whether a shetel is a valid hair covering. There were many, many poskim that had serious problems with there are to this day many poskim that have serious problems with a shetel. So those are the three issues. I'm going to try to discuss them rather quickly. So first of all, in terms of how private of an area, the Gemara tells us that a woman who wears a basket is not in violation of perua rosh, of having her hair uncovered. So the Gemara says, what do you mean? If she's out in the public market, she's in the shuk, then das yehudis he, then it's a blatant violation of Das Yehudis. So Gemara says, no, we're talking about if she's in the chatzer. Now, a chatzer is not something we have anymore, the way our neighborhoods are set up. The way it used to work is that you'd have, in one courtyard, you'd have three or four or five houses that shared that one yard. That yard would then open up into a larger street called the Mavoi. That Mavoi would open up into Rosh Hashanah. But within that yard is called the chatzer. So it was a few families that lived together in that yard. So within that chatzer, where you wouldn't do the most private things, but semi-private things, where it's more like just your chevra, your closest chevra that's there. So the Gemara assumes that that's okay. She can have her hair uncovered in the chatzer. Once she's out in the mavoi, once she's out in the shuk, she's out in Rosh Hasharabim, then it's not okay. So the simple reading of the Gemara with Rashi and Tosfos implies that in the chatzer, you don't really need to cover their hair. The Beis Shmuel on the side of the Shulchan Aruch says, yeah, but even there, it can't be totally exposed. It doesn't have to be totally covered either in the chatzer. Now, the majority of poskim seem to assume that it meant, when the Gemara says that in the chatzer it's okay to not cover your hair entirely, it means when nobody's in the chatzer and you're not necessarily expecting anybody imminently, but it's always a little more risky in the chatzer. It's like you're running out to your yard. The gardener might come out to the yard at this moment, but he also might not. So that's the kind of thing that they were discussing with the chatzer. But if somebody's there right now, if another man is there, so most of the poskim assume that would be the same as being in the shuk, because the whole point of being in the shuk, of being in the mavoi, is that there are people there. So if somebody else is there, if another man, I should say, not another woman wouldn't be a problem, but if another man is there, so that would be considered to be problematic. I asked a friend of mine to clarify Rabbi Chait's position on this, because Rabbi Chait is known to have some sort of more lenient position on this, and he said that based on something that he heard from Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, he holds that when a woman is in her home, she can present herself with uncovered hair in the presence of up to three men who are not her husband. And that's based on the idea, it's based on this Gemara, that the chatzer is a more private area. It's also based on the idea that covering the hair is not based on hirhurim, that a man is going to have hirhurim. Anything that's going to cause a man hirhurim, she would not be allowed to do in front of any man that's not her husband. But the raya that it's not about hirhurim is that single women are allowed to go with their hair uncovered. It's just about this requirement to cover the hair. So that is apparently his position, that the obligation for a woman to cover her hair is dependent on the place that she's in, and in public places she has to present herself differently than she would in private places. So the privacy of her own home would, where there are less than three men from outside the family there, his understanding is that it's permissible. I think the large majority of poskim assume not that way. Assume, like we said before, large majority of poskim seem to assume that if there's anybody that's not one's husband, and other relatives, maybe not, it's a less explicit discussion in the poskim, but at least not one's husband, would be problematic. Yeah, Lisa. So
you said something about if it's the gardener there, but obviously if it's just a man, not a woman, is there any issue with women seeing her hair?
Oh, so the Gemara says that there was a woman called Kimchis, And Kimchis was very, very special, and she had seven sons who were Kohanim Gedolim. All the Achronim asked, wait, is that a good thing? Because if seven sons were Kohanim Gedolim, that means six of them at some point either died or became Tamei or something happened that made them disqualified from being Kohanim Gedolim. But the assumption is that, you know, it's a pretty good thing to have seven sons of Kohanim Gedolim. And the Gemara says that they asked Kimchis, what did you do to be Zochah to have seven sons of Kohanim Gedolim? And she said, the walls of my house never saw my hair uncovered. That even the walls of her house never saw her hair uncovered. The Gemara says, oh please, a lot of women do that. They didn't have seven sons that were Kohanim Gedolim. So the Gemara, that line often gets lost. A lot of the poskim assume that in the end of the Gemara, she guessed wrong. That wasn't the Zuchus. There must have been some other Zuchus. But still, the poskim use Kimchus as an example, as a way of showing that Chumrah is in the area of haircut. Now, the Gemara never says it's required to do that, but it's used as an example, as a way of showing that Chumrah is in the area of hair covering are generally considered acceptable chumras. Some chumras are considered unacceptable chumras. Not everyone can just be machmir on things that they want to be machmir on, because very often when you take chumras, it's at the expense of something else. So we use kimchis as the example to show that it's a reasonable chumra to take chumras in hair covering. But that's when we're dealing with chumras. But in terms of the you know, guidelines of halacha in front of women, provided that it's not an area where men are going to be walking by. Again, let's say it's a women's gym where men aren't supposed to be there. So if men aren't supposed to be there and the gym is pretty good about protecting you from that, so then there's no requirement to cover your hair. That would not be called a public place, I don't think. Yeah.
Is there a difference between a Jewish
man and a non-Jewish? So it's very interesting. I always assumed not, but Rav Moshe has a very fascinating tshuva where Rav Moshe talks about using a public swimming pool where there's a male lifeguard on duty. And Rav Moshe talks about how there might be a chashash yichud with the lifeguard because he might be attracted to some of the women or whatever. And he doesn't just discuss the obvious problem of how are all these women swimming in front of the male lifeguard. So I don't know if you could be medayik so much from that tshuva, but you know, it always struck me that maybe Rav Moshe holds in front of a non-Jewish man, it's not nearly as much of an issue. But I think in terms of the what the Gemara is trying to suggest is that when you're in a public type of area where there are people there, where men are allowed to go, so even if it's a non-Jewish man, that's the level of tznius that's required is a fairly high level of tznius.
Yeah,
so again, my personal opinion is yes, that you should cover your hair
and
in that situation.
Opinion,
so this was a big issue when we remember this when we got married. When we got married, I asked around the Beis Medrash. I was a fairly young chassan, and I, you know, most of my friends weren't married yet, so I asked around the different kollel guys in the Beis Medrash, you know, what their wives did in front of their brother, in front of their father, you know, did they cover their hair or not? And everyone in the Beis Medrash was sure that it was a davar pashut. So the problem was half of the people thought it was a davar pashut that it's permissible. The other half of the people thought it was a davar pashut that it was asur. I remember I was at one of the Tendler bar mitzvahs and I went over to Rav Reuven Feinstein and I asked him, and again, I was 21 years old, and I asked Rav Reuven Feinstein what the halacha is, and Rav Reuven said, kimchis. And I had no idea what that meant. I had not learned the Gemara yet about kimchis. I was like, oh, kimchis. I had no clue what that meant. I just smiled and nodded. So I'm still not sure exactly what he told me. I think I asked Rav Schechter, and Rav Schechter, in his typical style, said, what does my daughter do? My daughter always covers hair around me. Yeah, I guess you should cover your hair in front of your father. So I'm not sure if that's his psak or his daughter's psak. If I'm not mistaken, Rabbi Willig said in front of her father she doesn't have to, but in front of her brothers she should. I think that's what Rabbi Willig said. I don't remember in the but I think that makes a certain amount of sense. Meaning the Rambam says that one is not supposed to hug and kiss their brothers, but you're allowed to hug and kiss your parents. So it would seem reasonable that covering your hair in front of a brother is something that's a worthwhile thing to do. In front of a parent, I don't think is required. In spite of Rav Schechter's daughter's psak to the otherwise, but any chumrah on this level is a nice chumrah. Yeah.
In the case that you mentioned, maybe I missed the beginning, but in the case that you mentioned where someone is not covering her hair at a Shabbos meal, how does her husband make kiddush or bench?
So there is a major discussion in the poskim, and it's the majority of poskim for a long time held that one is not allowed to say a bracha in front of a tefach bi'isha, an uncovered tefach of a part of the body that's supposed to be covered, or even sar bi'isha, because the Gemara calls them both erva. The Aruch HaShulchan, though, has a much celebrated comment, which is much misunderstood also, but what he actually does say is that since the hair is not something that's considered to be erotic anymore, therefore there's no problem of making a bracha in front of it, even though he says it's absolutely a necessity for one to cover their hair. It's just that it wouldn't be a problem to make a bracha. I think the majority of people are so mech on that Aruch HaShulchan, that we rely on that Aruch HaShulchan to make a bracha in front of uncovered hair. That's the opinion of the Aruch HaShulchan that seems to have been fairly widely accepted. So that's in terms of how public an area. Now, yeah?
You said you should cover your hair in front of the plumber in your house. Before you said you don't have to cover your hair in your house. So there's a conflict.
No, I didn't say. I said I was explaining Rabbi Chait's position. I do not agree with Rabbi, let me be clear about that. I do not agree with Rabbi Chait's position. Rabbi Chait is a very big Talmud Chacham and he's entitled to his opinion.
So what does Rabbi Chait
say? I never spoke to him. The way his Talmud reported it to me, and again, I never spoke to him. I don't think so. I was not able to. I tried to track that down, but I was not. Yeah, no, that's a different. Now, what? In your house? Yeah, when there's someone else there.
You should.
Okay, I think in your house. I think I did. Someone asked if the plumber's in your house. I think it's.
No, I know.
So. Okay, now,
in general,
if there's nobody there, so again, kimcha is a nice chumrah, but it's not required, though. Unless you live in a house, look, sometimes, you may find this hard to believe, sometimes in our house, the doors are all open, and random people just walk right in, especially when the shul was in our house. Then it happened all the time. People would come pick up their tefillin, stam, wanted to say tehillim, whatever. They just, then it was, but even now, sometimes the door is wide open, and when the door is wide open, obviously it's an invitation, so everyone just, people walk right in. In that situation, you should probably have your hair covered, but you can't really see inside in nighttime when the lights are on inside, and when it's lighter outside than it is inside, no one can see in your windows. When it's lighter inside than it is outside, people can't see through your windows. It's like the line, the police lineups, it's whatever. Okay. How much hair can show? So Rav Shturmach quotes from the Chazon Ish that the Tanisa Daraisi even to uncover some of your hair, but most of us know that Rav Moshe Feinstein had a different sheet about this. Rav Moshe in a couple of tshuvas in Eben Ezra Siman Nundalit and Aruch Chaim Chel Dal Siman Kuf Yudbeis brings rayos that uncovering less than a tefach is not a violation of Das Yehudis. He measures a tefach is this size. Now he measures the tefach as two fingers across the span of the forehead. So roughly that amount he thinks is not even a violation of Das Yehudis. So that would be even mutter lechadchila. It's quite a chiddush, but Rav Moshe has broad shoulders and he's allowed to say big chiddushim like that. So he holds that uncovering a tefach, even lechadchila, is perfectly permissible. Again, someone wants to be more machmir like Kimchis, that's wonderful. If one covers a little less than that, someone once said to me, if I'm not going to cover it fully anyway, so I might as well not cover anything. So at least the one thing we've learned is that that's obviously not true. Meaning having the basket on your head, like the Tropicana lady, is at least a fulfillment of the Doraisa. So maybe it's not yet on the level of the Drabban. That's like saying, if I can't help myself speaking Lashon Hara, I might as well just, let loose and just unload on everybody. No, that's not a healthy attitude toward Shmiras HaMitzvos. Now, whether a sheitel is a valid hair covering is also very interesting. The Mishnah Masechta Shabbos says that a woman can go out with a sheitel on Shabbos, with a peyon nachris, a sheitel on Shabbos. So the Shilta Giborim says, you see from there that a woman's allowed to wear a sheitel. That only hair that's still attached to the head is problematic. However, the Be'er Sheva argues vehemently against this. He says, no, a wig with human hair, absolutely forbidden. Peyon nachris means that it was something that was stuffed underneath the kerchief, but it wasn't actually a real sheitel that she would walk out, that a woman would walk out with. So what are the opinions of the poskim? Rav Vadi Yosef in Yabiyah Omer Chelek Hei, Eben Ezra Siman Hei, is very, very, very strongly against sheitels. He advises girls who are dating guys that want them to wear a sheitel that the boy is a Rasha and she should run the other way. And he says that all the major poskim, the Gra and Rabbi Yaakov Emden, Maritz Chayes, Chassam Sofer, all of them are against sheitels. Rav Aaron Soloveitchik's grandson told me that Rav Aaron Soloveitchik's wife only wore hats because Rav Aaron held that sheitelach are an invalid hair covering. It should be noted that if a Sephardic woman wears a sheitel, just because she's going against Rav Avadia Yosef's opinion, it doesn't necessarily mean that she's doing the wrong thing. There are other Sephardic poskim, believe it or not, aside from Rav Avadia Yosef. Like I just mentioned that Shalashudas last night, that a Talmud of mine bought a whole bunch of drinks at Starbucks that were on the non-recommended list. And he went on the website. He said, "Look, Rabbi Abadi says it's okay." Now, just like not every Sephardic person has to subscribe to Rav Avadia about the Sheitelach, you don't have to subscribe to everything Rav Abadi says about Kashrus. Both of them giants in Halacha and very, very great Talmidei Chachamim. But there could be machlokesim in Halacha, and we allow for that. That's okay. So the Tshuvas Yaskil Avdi, for example, another great Sephardi posik, says that Sheitelach are allowed. The Lubavitcher Rebbe Zichron Levracha held that Rav Avadia Yosef is also Zichron Levracha. I don't mean to slight him by not saying Zichron Levracha. I just always try to emphasize the Lubavitcher Rebbe Zichron Levracha. Held that a sheitel is much preferable to a kerchief. He held that a sheitel is much better than a kerchief, because he says a kerchief could easily fall off and be removed. A sheitel will stay on, so he was all for sheitelach. Rav Moshe writes that as long as people can tell that the hair is a wig, then there's no problem. So I don't know what that means. People can tell. I can't tell anything. No one's hair is covered in this room, as far as I can tell, except for the people wearing hats. But apparently, women can tell much more easily than men can tell. So I think men don't have to be able to tell, because men just, you know, don't really see anything. But women, if a woman could tell, if a woman could look at right at you and say, okay, that woman is obviously covering her hair. So then that's such a sheitel would be a good sheitel. But if it's too good, then Rav Moshe holds that it would not be okay. Rav Yashiv holds that theoretically human hair wigs would be permissible, but that all the wigs nowadays are usher because they look like too much like regular hair. That even if you could tell, but still it's just too nice. Rav Yashiv held that that all of them are usher, aside from the Avodah Zarah problems with the Indian hair and all that Rav Yashiv had issues with. Rav Yashiv was pretty strict about this. He would be more in favor of the $20 out of a box kind of a sheitel. I think my sister told me when Rav Shechter was here for Shabbos, she was talking to Rebbetzin Shechter about sheitels. Rebbetzin Shechter said $20 out of a box. I don't know. What does everyone spend so much money on? That's a basic overview of the halachos of hair covering. Now, a couple of general comments hashkafically before we conclude this year. First of all, as we mentioned before, based on that Gemara about Kimchis, it seems that additional chumros in this area are not viewed as inappropriate. They are considered welcome. Kimchis was zocha to have seven sons serve as Kohanim Gadolim in the merit of Koros Vesa Laroa Saros Rosha, that the walls of her house didn't see her hair uncovered. The Zohar, certainly, quoted by the Magen Avraham, is very, very machmir to never have any hair uncovered at any point in time, and that in that zuchus, a woman will merit very many blessings. Rav Shechter generally points out, and he writes this in Eretz HaTzvi in his first Sefer, that there is a direct link between the concept of Kedusha and the concept of Tznius. That those two concepts are very, very much linked with each other. There's a minhag for many generations where women who otherwise generally did not cover their hair, and otherwise generally even did not dress in the most tznua way, but when they came to shul, they always wore stockings and they always covered their hair for shul. Even though they were on the beach on all day Sunday with in bathing suits, but in shul, stockings, hair covered. Where did that come from? It sounds so strange to have such a minhag. So Rav Shechter said that he can't explain the minhag of being on the beach in a bathing suit all Sunday, but he said that maybe the idea of that extra level of tznius in a shul makes a lot of sense, because a shul is a makam kadosh, and a place of kedusha requires an extra level of tznius. So a place like a shul, a place that you anticipate or that you expect there to be a higher level of kedusha, there's definitely a link between tznius and kedusha. He has several Rayos. I'm not going to bore you with all of the proofs, mostly because I forgot most of them, but he has several rayos to this idea that there is this definite link between tznius and kedusha. But I think it's also very important to point out that a lot of times people like to define their frumkeit by one issue. They become one issue Jews, and they define their entire frumkeit by whatever that issue might be. Judaism is a very large religion, and not in terms of the numbers of people, but in terms of the numbers of laws, the numbers of mitzvahs, the numbers of halachos. It's generally unhealthy to have an imbalanced view of our religion. If one views Judaism only through the lens of hair covering, then they're not really seeing an accurate picture of what the religion is about. There's a famous story with a Litvisha Rashiv. It's well known, I think, that in previous generations, all the Litvisha Rashi Yeshiva, all their wives didn't cover their hair. Soloveitchik's wife didn't cover her hair. Binyamin's mother, Shalom, told me that her mother-in-law, Rav Pam's wife, when she first got married, did not cover her hair. It was only later on that she took upon herself to cover it. And that was not unusual. I think in the Kol in Chaim Berlin, when in the 50s, I think Rav Huttner's wife was like the only person in all of Chaim Berlin who covered their hair. It was very unusual. I think maybe Rav David Cohen's wife also. That, but very, very few. It was very unusual. It was not, for some reason, and what's the explanation for that minhag? I don't know. But the story goes that there was a Litvisha Rosh Yeshiva sitting near a Hasidic Yid, because all the Hasidim always covered their hair, and the Chassid's wife had a shetel on, but she wasn't dressed as sneezes, otherwise she wasn't dressed in a modest way at all. So the Litvisha Rosh Yeshiva remarked that maybe you should take the shetel off your head and put it on your knees. That would be a little more tsunua, meaning a lot of times people define their whole concept of, even in tsnius, it's a very narrow definition to define the whole concept of tsnius only by the hair covering. That's not all that there is to tsnius both on both sides. It doesn't mean that if you uncover your hair that everything else that you do is not tsnius, meaning a person can dress in a more tsnua way and can accomplish things in tsnius even if they're not yet at a stage where they're observing the halachas of hair covering properly. And on the other side, a person who covers their hair shouldn't say, okay, now I'm frum, I cover my hair, so I could do whatever I want. My clothing could be whatever I want them to look like, because as long as I'm covering my hair, I'm okay. It's just not healthy to view things in that way. Once had a guy come to me and say that his wife, who was covering her hair to that point, didn't want to cover her hair anymore. And I spoke to one of my rabbis about how to handle the situation, and I spoke to Rav Silver about it, and he said, look, we should all be zocha to have a chelek in Olam Haba next to Rebbetzin Soloveitchik. We should all be zocha to have such a chelek. The danger in it is just that other than the fact that it's just not observing that halacha, but there is that additional danger of that if a person feels like this is what my Judaism is, then when a person stops doing that, then they feel like the rest of their Judaism could go down the drain also. And that's not healthy. We shouldn't define ourselves as Jews with any single halacha, whatever that halacha might be. Judaism is big, and we all have failings in certain areas, and we all have successes in certain areas. And the idea is to always be growing and always try to build on our successes and try to get better in those areas that we sometimes have more difficulty with. So that's the that's one, I guess, hashkafa that I'm always somewhat sensitive to when it comes to hair covering. I don't know why this was chosen as the way people define their religion so much, as opposed to, like I said before, lashon hara. That seems like a much better gauge of whether a person is
people can see it.
Right. I guess it's more right. It's more demonstrative. Everyone could see what's there, what's not there. Okay, but I would think clothing is also pretty much out there. But for some reason, this became the issue. Again, it is an important issue. It's a din d'oraisa. But there are a lot of dinim d'oraisa, so we should try to be makbid on all of them. It's also, I think, important to note that, let's say, we drive by a McDonald's every single day and we never go in to eat from the McDonald's. So how much schar are we getting for driving by that McDonald's every single day and not going in to eat? So we're getting very, very little schar for that, because we don't really have a yetzer hara for it. First of all, our nutritionist would never allow it. So, but even if the nutritionist would allow it, it's not something we were raised with. It's not something we care about. It's not something that we have any yetzer hara for. And that's not where we earn our stripes. That's not where we get our schar. Whatever is most challenging for us, what Rav Dessler refers to as the nekudas habechira, the place where we're really struggling, that's ultimately where we get our greatest schar. So for some people who struggle with this issue, with the issue of tznius in general, with the issue of hair covering, or with any issue, it's really could be anything. If one struggles with Shmir Shabbos, or one struggles with Lashon Hara, or one struggles with doing proper chesed, or with giving tzedakah because they're naturally stingy, or whatever the issue is that one struggles with, that's where we earn our stripes. That's where we really gain our greatest schar. When we manage to empower ourselves to overcome the Yetzer Hara on the issue that we struggle the most with. So it's on the one hand, it's very, again, I can't relate because I don't know. Putting on a yarmulke is pretty easy, you know, and I'm not always so good about wearing my hat for mincha during the week, you know. So I can't exactly relate to the struggle. But if it is a struggle, then maybe that's empowering. Maybe if it's a struggle, that's exactly where you're going to find your zechuyos. Whatever areas in life that you struggle, that I struggle, that's where we find our zechuyos that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is really going to reward us for. Then one final word, hashkafically. I've often heard the concept of the reason that a woman has to cover her hair is that she has to save her beautiful hair for her husband. And then everyone says, come on, you know, her beautiful hair is what she puts on over her hair. The hair that she's saving for her husband is not her beautiful hair, that's her hair. So it doesn't at all relate. So I don't really, regardless of whether there's any merit to that argument of saving the best for the husband, I do think as a general shalom bias issue, not in terms of hair, not in terms of looks, not in terms of presentation, but in general, saving our best for home, both for men and for women, in general is a very good idea, and it's something that's very, very challenging. What do I mean by that, by saving our best for home? You have people that sometimes will greet anybody and everybody with the biggest smile in the world. But they walk in the house and they greet their spouse with a groan, with a grunt, and that's certainly not saving our best for home. Sometimes you have people who are extraordinarily capable. You have a guy, let's say, who's like the boss in his office, and he's doing great, and everyone admires how much he's able to get done. And all of a sudden, he walks in the door of his house, and like he forgets everything. He's like he doesn't know how to change a light bulb, take out the garbage, do anything anymore. And that's certainly not saving the best for home. So I think, even though I don't really understand the concept of the hair being saving the best for home, I just thought it's a good hashkafa in general. That in general, we should always try to save our best for home. We should let our children see us at our best, not only at our worst. We should let our spouses see us at our best, not only at our worst. And that takes a lot, because that's the one place when we're home is where we can let our guard down a little bit, where we could, you know, we're always on guard when we're dealing with other people. So it takes a lot of willpower to actually save our best for when we're home, but it's a very worthwhile endeavor. They tell the famous story, I believe it's with Rav Aryeh Levine, that right before he was about to enter his house, he started straightening his tie and making sure his jacket was okay, and someone said, what are you doing? You're going inside, you're not going outside. He said, yeah, but I'm going inside to see my wife. I want to look nice for my wife. I don't care how I look for the guys in the kollel. I care about it, or for the prisoners that I'm visiting. Rav Aryeh Levine was always visiting prisoners with all sorts of issues. So it doesn't matter how I look for them. It matters how I look when I'm coming home. I think more so than how we look is how we behave and how we act. And my wife will tell you, I'm speaking to myself more than anybody else, that sometimes, especially people in public positions, where you know you're always with a smile and happily greeting everyone else and have all the time in the world for everyone else, but your kid needs a minute of your time and forget it. No, I'm busy. I don't have time for you. And you know, there's that exuberance and that joy that we have with, and that ability, how geschickt we are with handling everybody else, sometimes doesn't come through in the home. And that's I think something that's a worthwhile hashkafa, if not about hair covering, then in general about just the way that we act outside versus the way that we act inside. Again, I want to thank the Newmans for hosting. I want to thank Natalie Horowitz for sponsoring. This year again should be an aliyah for the neshama of Shana Bas Avraham, alayhi shalom.